Okay. All right, good morning. We're going to call a meeting of the Carson City Board of Supervisors and the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board to order. Today is Thursday, September, Thursday, September 3rd, 2015. It is 8:30 a.m. We're at the Community Center at 851 East William Street. Can we have a roll call, please, Sue?
Good morning. Supervisor About, Supervisor Bonkowski, Supervisor Bagwell, Supervisor Shirt, Mayor Kroll. Here. We have a quorum.
Thanks. Can we call on our good friend Ken Haskins to the Rock and Rev to get us started this morning? What a pleasure. All right, we're going to now move to item number five, public comment. This is the time for anybody to speak on any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the public body as described in the agenda. We also have a special presentation during public comment this morning. So let me ask the chief before he gets started, let me ask, is there anybody who wants to speak at this time? We'll also speak during the week, during all the agenda items and at the end. I don't see anybody. Okay, Chief Sherian, go.
For the record, Bob Shrihan's fire chief, and I have Chief Turulli and Chief Charles. One of the things we'd like to do today is to recognize basically public safety, but also the fire department. And obviously, you know, the issues with Deputy Howe that we had, we're the behind the scenes group, and some of the guys who are here were the actual responders on that call. And those types of calls affect all of us, even from way back when to IHOP to here. And we just want to make sure that on behalf of the administration that we recognize our guys, and also that the board knows that we are the ones who are out there, along with the sheriff's department, who are working out there and to take care of these types of calls. The other thing we want to do also is to recognize all the work they did to put the funeral on. And our honor guard is here, and one of our guys who was instrumental in presenting the whole funeral and putting it all together is here, and we want to basically represent those guys and say thank you for all the work they've done, and to make sure that we can put a face, or you guys can put a face to the people who are behind all this and making sure it all happens. Some of the guys work tirelessly to put our engine into service to be able to where we have to change a bunch of stuff to be able to put the casket in it. They worked night and day for 3 days to get that engine ready, changed all the flagging, polished it, shined it up, made sure everything was perfect for that procession that we had. So that's what we're here for today, and we just want to make sure that these guys are honored, that it shows that the administration is behind what they're doing, that you guys know what's going on, and also Sheriff Furlong will say something too.
For the record, Sheriff Furlong, I obviously couldn't agree more with the chief. It was a long week for us, and we had a lot of things going, set aside the arrangements, and it could not have been achieved without the fire department kicking in and really, I don't know, Bob, acting as our crutch, keeping us standing upright and going forward and bringing about a service that was most dignified for a true hero. Deputy Howell performed an amazing response, and as as Bob said, as difficult as it may sound, the fact that many of these gentlemen here in the back of the room were on the scene that night and turned right around and did all that Bob has said is so humbling to the sheriff's office. I just can't restate that enough, and I appreciate it, and I want to personally thank all of you folks for that.
So if you wouldn't mind, Mayor, if you...
Yeah, let me just say from up here, and maybe the other board members have something to want to weigh into before I make a presentation down there. I think the sheriff hit the nail on the head, and these things do touch everyone. And I think, you know, when we use the term first responders, you know, it's all of you in this room. It's our law enforcement folks. And it goes down even, not even to, but it goes to the public works folks who are there, you know, roping the area off, keeping traffic out. And it extends to dispatchers who take the call and who are deeply affected by these things. I think all of us up here will all probably have something to say, but we just can't thank you. And we're so proud of you. We can't thank you enough. And I was here along with the sheriff, and I don't recall who else on the IHOP issue, and I know how devastating that was to the folks in this room as well as to law enforcement. So, anybody?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that it seems that our city, unfortunately, has had to call on you too many times in the last few years, and it's very comforting to us to know that you're there when we need you.
I knew Carl and had brief conversations with him. Quite a hero, quite a man. I would like to acknowledge the support that was shown from this community when they lined the streets from one end to the other. It was really moving to see this community come together, unfortunately, at this time, but quite the support. Thank you.
I think they've all said everything that's necessary, but just from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank you.
One of the things, Mayor, is some of the guys who were the first responders, who were actually the first guys on the scene, was Paramedic Jeff Linscott was there. Captain Albee was instrumental in setting up the honor guard and running the whole procession for the funeral. Also, Robbie Cook and Boggs, Travis Boggs, were tremendous in what they did for the rigs and getting everything set up. So we just want to recognize them. And we're not forgetting anybody else. All these guys were involved, the guys that came in on duty to come back to cover the folks, the people who were on the call, and even our seasonal program that we're here to make sure everything works. So we just want to recognize everybody. And also, Dan Albee is also the secretary of the association, and they pitched in to help out. So we want you to present that plaque to him. So
it's a tremendous honor to be able to present this plaque, and we have the entire board with us here, and so we'll recess in a moment and take some photos here. But on behalf of the community of Carson City and on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, let me present this to Dan Albee, and I'll read it as follows. It says, presented to the members of the Carson City Fire Department in recognition of your selfless commitment in the days surrounding the loss of Deputy Carl Howell. The compassionate actions of all personnel during this tragic event were recognized by many in this community. I think we're recognized by all in this community. We are proud of our Carson City Fire Department family, deeply proud. Fire Administration, September 3rd, 2015. On behalf of our community, Dan, would you please accept this plaque for our thank you. Okay, we're going to take some photos. So if we could have everybody, let's see if we can. This is. Okay, we'll stuff them all in here. Come on, let's go. Come on. All right. We're going to be in recess just while we do some photos here. All right, we're going to call a meeting of the board back to order. We're still on public comment. Anybody on public comment at this time?
Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind,
sure.
One other thing, because I messed up my computer and now I don't know what I'm doing. I appreciate all the comments made today, but there is the responses of public safety in this town are a little bit unique, and I didn't want to fail to forget or fail to not note. Public Works has been with us every step of the way, from the scene all the way through the services, as well as the fire department. Public Works has been one of those tremendous soldiers standing right with us, and I just did not want to forget that.
No, I think that was absolutely well taken. I don't think you ever did forget that. Okay. All right. Any other public comment? All right, then we'll move on to item six, possible approval of the minutes of July 16th. Everybody had a chance to look at those?
I move to approve the minutes of July 16th, 2015, as presented.
Motion, second. On the motion, discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. On the agenda, any changes?
No change.
Board? Hearing none, unless there's an objection, we'll take the agenda as published. Let's move on to item number eight. Do I have... Are you ready for this?
We may have to roll that to the next meeting, Mr. Mayor.
That's what I thought.
Unfortunately.
Okay. We are going, because we have something prepared for the sheriff here, and I don't want to overlook that. So it's not, that's why I want to make sure that we're on track here. So we will take that up when we have our ducks in a row. Very good. Okay. Let's move on to recess as the Board of Supervisors, and we'll call to order the Liquor and Entertainment Board. The record will reflect that all the members of the Board of Supervisors are here, as well as Sheriff Furlong. Karen's missing, excuse me. Supervisor Abel's missing. We're on public comment under Liquor and Entertainment Board. Anyone? Okay, let's take up item number 12, the minutes of July or June 18th and July 2nd. Everybody had a chance to look at those. We'll take a motion to approve the minutes of June 18th.
I move to approve the minutes of the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board for June 18th, 2015, as presented.
Motion, second on the motion, discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous on July 2nd. Motion's in order.
I move to approve the minutes of the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board for July 2nd, 2015, as presented.
Motion in a couple seconds on the motion, discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Okay, let's now move up to item 13, community development, the business license for Blue Cafe. Lena, you taking this one?
This item is to approve Roberta Ann Davies as the liquor manager for Blue Cafe LLC. Liquor license number 16-30816, located at 240 East Winnie Lane. The Blue Cafe LLC is applying for a full liquor license. It's a full-service restaurant open for breakfast and lunch, and staff is recommending approval.
Very good. Is Roberta here this morning? Come on up. Why don't you come on up and tell us a little bit about your business, what's going on, and yeah, please have a seat.
My first time.
That's okay. Welcome to the board.
Thank you.
And you got to turn that little red. I got to press a button there, so a little light goes on.
That okay. Well, we started the end of June. We're open breakfast and lunch, as she said. Full-service restaurant, bistro style. We're hoping to open for dinner this fall or early winter. Weren't sure if we needed a liquor license at all. We first opened just doing breakfast and lunch, but we've had a lot of requests for it. We serve a lot of pasta, a lot of French food. Wine and beer would go along with that very nicely.
Why don't you tell us exactly where the location is? I know we got the address, but so people can know where it is if they want to come down. And
it's at the Crossroads Shopping Center. Just behind McDonald's and that area.
And you're the majority owner. And tell us about how you're going to police or prohibit underage drinking or folks like underage getting.
Well, all of our servers have the responsible server certification, and my dining room manager, who will be basically supervising the majority of the service, has had the sheriff's training as well. It'll be mandatory that all employees that could even possibly serve will have the certifications as well.
Very good.
Plus ongoing training as required.
Board comments? Anybody? Motions in order, Supervisor Binkowski.
I move to approve Roberta Ann Davies as the liquor manager for Blue Cafe LLC, liquor license 16-30816, located at 240 East Winnie Lane.
Motion and a second on the motion, discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay, carried unanimous. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, go make money.
Thank you.
do well. I'm sure you'll see.
We're trying really hard.
Okay,
so
that's
continue.
Good. Thanks for the investment in the city, too, Roberta.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. The sheriff says he's going to be down for. He eats a lot, so he'll probably be down a couple times. All right. We're now on. Thank you very much. We're now on item 14, concluding public comment under the Liquor and Entertainment Board agenda. Anybody? I don't see anyone, so we will now adjourn as the Liquor and Entertainment Board and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors. Take up item 17, the assessor. This is a potential interlocal agreement between Carson City Assessor's Office and Lander County. Mr. Dolly, good morning to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Board of Supervisors, Dave Dolly, Carson City Assessor's Office.
What we're asking you to do today is approve an interlocal agreement with Landry County. This is an actual continuation of an agreement. We've been doing this service to Landry County for about 2 years now. And so they're pleased with the product that we're providing them, and we're pleased in the fact that we are actually able to provide their service to them. If you'll recall, when we had the efficiency study, that my GIS analyst, Ken Shannon, was actually noted in there that we're not using him to the best of his ability, because we don't have enough growth here in Carson City to sustain him for a full-time just with Carson City Maps. And so we believe that with this agreement with Lander County, it's helping us to fulfill and use him to the best efficiency that we can. All of the costs that are associated with the maps, you know, the mailing, the ink, all the costs for Lander County, we actually bill them. So we are not absorbing any of the costs. This is strictly a $55 an hour charge for 25 hours a week. And the fee, when we went to go establish it, we actually talked to the previous finance director, and it had been $55 an hour, and he said that that was still a very, very verifiable figure, and so that's why we went with it again. This contract was actually established, or was written by Lander County, so I understand there are some clerical errors, and I apologize. I did not write it. We did not write it, and so just wanted to get that on the record.
Promise not to bring up the typos.
Thank you.
So it sounds like you're happy with the way the program's been running, where our costs are being covered. I guess my only remaining question is this something that you want to revisit when the GIS contract changes next year, or is it 2 years?
Well, I believe we will have to revisit it because this contract is only for another 2 years. I guess there's a lot of stuff up in the air right now as far as what's going to be happening with the GIS. So, yes, I think we do definitely need to revisit it.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Do you have to travel to – is there travel time involved in this?
Very rarely.
I think he's been out there twice in the
so
last
it's all
2 years.
It's done remote. Then.
Right.
All right. That's what I thought. Okay. All right. Anybody? Motion's in order.
Resolution number?
That's Resolution 2015-R36.
I move to adopt Resolution number 2015-R36, a resolution approving and authorizing the mayor to sign an interlocal agreement by and between Carson City Assessor's Office and Lander County Assessor's Office, which provides Carson City Assessor's Office to maintain, create, and update parcel data for Lander County Assessor.
Motion and a second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay, carried unanimous. Thanks, Dave. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, let's take up the grant issue with NDOT for the possible purchase of a wheelchair van. Grants, who's got it? Chief, Tom? We're growing so much that we need another van?
Okay. Yeah, for the record, Bob Shreans with Tom Trulli. Fire Department. What we'd like to do is kind of explain what this new wheelchair van is for and how it's going to work and what we're doing with it. So with that, I'll give it to Tom.
Good morning. Approximately a year ago, we submitted a grant through the DOT to the Federal Transit Authority for another wheelchair van. We didn't think that was possible at first because we said, you know, we have currently four vans we use for our wheelchair program through CTH. But the three of those vans are used a lot every day. And we have a backup, a smaller van, it's a little minivan, that usually one of them are out of service for whatever reason, even preventive maintenance. And the hospital requires that, look, we need three vans every day. So it's quite the struggle to keep all three of those moving. So it was just turned into a little investigation. I wonder if we can get one more through DOT. If we use that for not just with the hospital, but use it through the fire department, when we get those phone calls from the citizens who ask, you know, I'm in a wheelchair or my family member's in a wheelchair, my mom and dad are in a wheelchair. We can't transport them in the car or the truck or a taxi service. Our RSVP is a great provider in town, but they have issues with trying to move a lot of people that have the disabilities or medical issues. So we saw there was a great opportunity for us to fill that void that no one else has the ability to fill and be able to give me another van should I need it to help with the hospital process as well. And the grant got approved, I guess, about a month ago. They called and said, the federal money is in, the state received the money, and now you're able to order your van. Are you ready to go? Well, absolutely. So I said, yes, we still want the wheelchair accessible van, and we're going to put it in our fleet to help run that program at the hospital so we don't fall and falter on that agreement with the hospital and move all of those patients and to get our process moving here with the fire department to try to help those people who call us, said, I'm at my wit's end, can you help me? And now I think I'll have at least the means to move those folks and maybe working with the part-time MedTrans wheelchair personnel that I have, I could help fulfill that. And so it just all kind of seemed to fit perfectly. And so we're at that point to, if you approve that process and approve that grant, I've sent the paperwork in and it's sitting at the desk at DOT waiting for the place the order. Our van will be actually identical to the RSVP van as well. They're getting a new one as well. So it'll assist both of us.
If the other three vans were in use and there was a call for service, would that person then have to wait if we didn't have the fourth van, or would an ambulance go out to pick them up?
I think with the other small minivan that I have, I will be able to have at least one more in reserve, so I don't have to deny somebody a movement. I will ask that hopefully they could give us at least 2 days' notice so I can schedule the van and schedule the driver. And should one of the other vans break down, I can switch over to that other minivan that we have in reserve as well, which are, they're kind of similar.
And then there are some corrections to the information that we have in our package that I just want to read into the record. In the original packet, the floor mats were included in the option price, but they're not actually included. So the correct price for the option package is $3,045. On the late material that came out, it shows the grant amount as $42,611, but I believe it should be $34,088.80.
Yeah, there was so much paperwork going back and forth with myself and the person at DOT that I calculated the accessories or the add-ons incorrectly. And then once you have a wrong calculation for the accessories you wanted, and each time I plugged the numbers in, the price of the van with the accessories, it came out right every time. I did the 20%. I'm thinking, I'm good. I checked it many times. I'm good. But you're always going to come up with a good number if you keep starting with the wrong number up front. So I did call the representative. I said, I really don't need to spend that kind of money on floor mats. I do not need the floor mats. So the second packet you received was the correct price of the van, the accessories we needed, and you are correct. The accessories will be $3,045. The total grant would be $42,611. And our portion would be $8,522.20.
So the total price of the van is $42,611.
Correct.
Our match is $8,522.20, and the grant would be $34,088.80.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. My email I sent was just questioning, will the fire department need to increase staff to man this vehicle?
No, sir. Right now, we have three MedTrans personnel that work for us. They provide the wheelchair service through the CTH. So, and when those three are working during the week, I have three others that are part-time on the weekends and per diem standby. So during the week, I'm able to use those three to operate our van through the fire department. And should it be on the weekend, I have the three full-time people that work during the week who said, I'd be willing to come in on the weekend should you have to move someone in a wheelchair for the fire department as well. So I have three and three to choose from and not impacting our staffing at this point.
Okay. Any other board comments? Public comment?
I got one thing. Yep. Just so you guys realize that the current wheelchair van system that we have is contracted with Carson Tower Hospital, and it only takes their patients. Okay. So to answer your question, if somebody calls and say, can we take them? Right now, we can't. because those are contracted through the hospital. The fire department doesn't have any ability to do it. With this van, now we can. So we're looking at changing a little bit the way we operate, just so you guys understand that, you know, we're going to set up this wheelchair van through the hospital, not through the hospital, but through the fire department, through our EMS section, because we're trying to tier our system down. So now we're going to have, you know, paramedics, and we're going to have BLS, and then we're going to have our wheelchair van and try to schedule all those all together. Right now, we're using with, depending on what the workload is, we're going to see how this works with our Medtrans folks to run this particular van. And then we'll kind of see where we are with that. If it's busy enough to where it warrants somebody, if we have to have somebody all the time, then we'll come back and talk to you. But it's going to be able to pay for itself, so it won't be a cost issue. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Mostly. Mostly. Yes, yeah,
Bill. So can I ask, when you said it'll pay for itself, do you mean you'll bill for a transport like you do an ambulance, but it'll be a step down, less rate for the public too? You won't have to charge them the full cost of an ambulance.
Correct.
Right?
We're trying to make one more way of moving folks who need it, but it's going to be a lot less than what it costs to have an ambulance out there.
Okay, so you'll be able to provide service to the Carson City residents at a lesser rate.
Correct.
Right. And Chief, while I got you there, sort of on reimbursement rates, I saw your name on a study about Medicaid reimbursement. You want to talk a little bit about that, about maybe increasing?
Sure. Well, what's going on is we've been working on what is called the ground emergency. Basically, it's a ground emergency medical tax, right? But it's under transport, but it's under Medicaid. So we have been working with the Medicaid for the past year or 10 months to get a new system of funding for reimbursement for our Medicaid folks that are here in town. So what we're doing is where we are right now with that is that we've been working on it for a long time. And we finally have everything all worked out about the cost allocation plan, what it's going to take, what the paperwork has to do, how that the state is going to agree to accept their Medicaid. So September, I think the 29th, is we're going in front of the Medicaid board to change the state plan. And the state plan is now going to change to where we will be reimbursed under the Medicaid system, similar to what the hospitals are. So we have to do a cost analysis of what a true cost is for a call, because we might bill $1,200 for a call, but it actually probably more like $2,500 by the time you add everything up of what it costs us to run. And then we get a reimbursement of actual costs versus what they normally pay us, because Medicaid is basically a contracted discounted rate. So I believe it's like, you know, we might have an ambulance bill for $1,200, but they only pay, I think it's like $189. Well, what's going to happen is under the new system, under the GEMT, is that they will pay 65% of our actual cost of what that is. So we're in the process of, I've been working with, and we've done some stuff with Dancy on what our actual call cost, true cost is, and we're able to include part of the fire station's fuel, power, admin, all that stuff that goes along with it creates what the true cost of a call is, and then we'll be able to hopefully reimburse ourselves for those in a year. It's a year behind. So that's what's going on with that.
Pretty good. I'm glad you guys are looking at that. Supervisor Shirk, did you want to go down that road? Sure. Motion's in order.
I move to accept a grant from the Nevada Department of Transportation in the amount of $42,611 for the purchase of a wheelchair van and to provide a match of $8,522.20.
Can we correct the amount of the grant to $34,088.80?
Stand corrected, and thank you. $3,488.80.
Okay. There's a motion and a second on the motion discussion. Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay, carried unanimous. Thanks very much, and thanks for you guys.
Thank you very much, you guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for looking at ways to get us reimbursed, too. Yeah. Pretty smart. I saw your name. I thought, you know, it's all right. That's all right. That's all right, Chief. Okay. I'm sure as you can take on those complicated tasks as well as putting out fires. Okay. All right. Ms. Paulson, this is a normal issue that we take on condition of each fund. Any member of the board have any questions about this? Questions in order.
Nancy, can you just explain the amount under receipts for sewer operations, that includes some bond proceeds?
Yes, that Nancy Paulson, Finance Director. That includes approximately $6.3 million in bond proceeds that were issued in August.
Other questions? Public comment? Seeing none, all motions in order.
I move to accept the report on the condition of each fund in the Treasury and the statement of receipts and expenditures through August 25th, 2015 per NRS 251.030 and NRS 354.290.
Motion a couple seconds on the motion, discussion, hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Thanks, Nancy. Okay. Let's now move to purchasing, item 20A.
Good morning, Laura Tadman, purchasing and contracts.
Who's going to take this, Eric or Laura?
Good morning, Eric von Schulman.
Okay.
Interim IT director.
All right. This item, staff is recommending the approval of purchase order 2016-22 with Insight Public Sector for $200,000 and purchase order 2016-023 with SHI for $150,000 and purchase order 2016-24 with CVE Technology for $225,000 for software, hardware, and various computer devices citywide through Joinder Contract 1516-036. The various citywide operating budgets have a combined total of $1,434,718, and Eric is here to answer any other questions in regards to.
So why don't you just, Laura, just highlight the numbers again, just summarize the numbers that we have and budgeted and what the cost is on this one?
Well,
I think you just gave it to us, but
the first one is for $200,000, $150,000, and $225,000. Total $575,000.
Right. Okay. That's all. Just clarity of the record. Okay. We got a couple questions, but before we, you want to go on this one, or you want to wait till Eric talks? Go now.
So. These are blanket purchase orders, so we're not approving specific purchases. We are approving spending limits.
That's
so
correct.
Can you go through the process of once the budgeted spending limits are authorized, what is the procedure for ordering specific items and the checks and balances to make sure that those are authorized expenditures?
Okay, so out of that $575,000, we currently have $100,000 in the IT budget that was approved by the board last year under capital projects for a network infrastructure upgrade. On top of that, Public Works has another $90,000 budgeted for that project. On top of that, we have the Sheriff Department. Their Tiburon project has $63,000 budgeted for computer and software upgrades in there. The remaining is $322,000 that we're looking for break fix and departmental level IT projects. They bring them to us daily, and we go through a process between IT and finance to validate that the departments have the appropriate funding available.
Thank you, Eric. And then also in the in the Joinder contracts, the master price agreements, there's a provision in there where they have the ability to charge a 2.5% surcharge for credit card payments.
Yes.
So can you just tell us what the procedure is? How do we make sure that we don't use credit cards to pay for these and incur that charge?
Well, the long and short of it is I'm the only one in the IT department that has a credit limit that high, and that's for emergency purposes only. So internally, the control is by me. So nobody else on the staff has the ability to make that purchase.
Yeah. Hi. When I'm looking at the Insight purchase order, it indicates that you can purchase various computer hardware. When I actually look at the WSCA agreement, there is no hardware in that agreement. So you're only going to purchase the right answers from the right vendors, correct? Because there is no hardware, even though you're authorizing hardware on the purchase order. So just as a clarifying, they should match the agreements. But can you tell me last year how much you guys spent in break fix?
Yes. Well, in break fix or total to – so Insight – and yeah. So the question to Insight. Insight, we buy hardware and software. Now, under all computers, software, and hardware are exempt from open competitive bidding. Right. Really what we're looking for is a blanket purchase order because we're going to go over the $50,000 limit where we have to notify you per NRS and purchasing internal policies. So last year with Insight, we spent – our we had a blanket purchase order that we had brought to you back in November. It was $200,000. We spent actually $186,000. So we were about 93% when we spent that last year.
What about the other ones? What I'm trying to get at is how did you determine the amount to make the blanket? You didn't just pie in the sky, pick a number.
So I went through historical and figured out how much we spent on various with various companies, and then I took into account, like this year we have the network upgrades. A lot of that is going to go towards Cisco equipment. Primarily we use CVE for that, so I increase their amount. But I do use CVE and Insight for Cisco, and I compete, put them in competitive bid between each other. Even though I don't have to do it internally, I do that process. So I could move the money between the two.
And just so you're aware, it is a little bit of a process because we have to look through our P-card system and figure out what was spent on P-card versus check. So finance helped Eric get the last year numbers, and then he ran from there.
So this is consistent with our budget and what we normally spend in software and hardware to maintain the city's structure and system.
Yeah, if it was anywhere near $50,000 last year, we told him to come and just get it approved in case.
Obviously, I think we're all having trouble with the open-end, not-to-exceed type contract, which I mentioned to you. So I think that's very hard to absorb because you might as well just say it's this rather than not-to-exceed. Just have a blanket. I think not-to-exceed, the verbiage is wrong because it just leads to speculation as to what does it involve. And if I'm understanding from our conversations and email, it is pretty hard for you to determine as we move through the year what is going to break and need replacing. So there needs to be that, open-end contract so you can replace it as it comes necessary. I understand that. It's a very hard role for you to do that. But there is a history of what we've done in the past. That's how you determine the dollar amount here today. So that being said, I appreciate your time and your effort. And I think it's very difficult for you as well as it is for us to accept this. Thank you.
Yes. Now, comment on that. Actually, I went back to last year's approval, and Supervisor Bronkowski, you had actually added the words not to exceed on the award last year on the motion. So.
Okay. Supervisor, is that it?
Yes, sir. Sorry. Okay.
Public comment? I don't see any. Motion's in order. Supervisor Bronkowski has your finger on the button.
I move to approve purchase order numbers 2016-022, 023, and 024 for software, hardware, and associated peripheral equipment and devices through joinder contract number 1516-036 for an amount not to exceed $575,000.
Motion and a second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Thank you. Okay, Laura, stay there. All right. We'll now take up item 20B. This is Curtis & Sons, Inc. For the Carson City Fiber Optic Dispatch Public Works Community Center to Public Works. Who's going to take this? Oh, man.
Laura, do you want to go ahead and do the announcement, and then we can go from there?
All right. All right. Staff is requesting to award contract 1516-014 to Curtis & Sons for the Carson City Fiber Optic Project, dispatched to Public Works and Community Center to Public Works for the bid amount of $290,203.50 with a 10% contingency of $29,020.35
for a total not to exceed amount of $319,223.85. $70,000 of this project is coming from the sheriff's account, which has a budget of $143,727.23. The balance will come from two capital project funds, which each have a budget of $131,107.50. This project was advertised on July 17th, and bids were opened August 17th. Two bids were received, with Curtis & Sons being the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. And I believe we have many Public Works here to answer any other questions.
Good morning, Darren Schultz, Public Works, for the record.
Before we get there, Laura, thank you very much for it.
Thank you.
That's kind of what we're looking for. And when we open these things up, give us the background of where the budget and money's coming from. I think, well done. So go ahead, Mr. Schultz.
Darren Schultz for the record, Public Works. So there's a number of us here. There was a few questions on this item, and it spans several departments. So we're all here basically for questions. James can give a little bit of an overview as specifically what we're doing here, but that's why we're not trying to gain a company.
Okay. So you're available for questions then, is what you're saying? All right. Before we get down that road, let's see if there's any public comment. I don't see any. Okay, board, questions are in order. Go.
Do you guys have my questions there? Do you want to just go into them, or do you want me to repeat them? They were mainly on the security of the fiber, and is this a redundant line, or is it a proprietary line, a new line? And also, looking forward into the future, do we have the ability to use this line or multiple lines that are being installed to provide fiber service to the business community?
Sure, I'll go ahead and start off. James Jacklett, Operations Manager, Public Works. So the basic premise of this project is to establish core fiber optic communication connectivity between critical facilities. We've been at this for years. It's part of our strategic plan for communications to connect our facilities with fiber optic. It is the standard. It's the best that we can do, and it's worth it. It raises our operational capability and really opens up the future with what we can do with for bandwidth and applications and productivity. So this is the fiber connects from the community center to Public Works, and then from Public Works all the way down to the dispatch center. And it passes many critical city assets that are going to be connected at a later date. It passes right by them, so those will be handled through other projects for the water and wastewater system for those critical automation systems, and make sure that we have that connectivity. The community center is already connected into City Hall, which is where we have our connection to the state network and those greater resources. So by doing this, we're bringing everybody up a notch, giving them the bandwidth and connectivity that they need on the engineering side for Public Works, on the operations side for the water, wastewater, and dispatch center, emergency operations, and all of that. I think a few of the questions you asked as far as how this can be used by the business community, I think a few of those questions were directed or were answered by Eric, so I'll let him answer what we can and can't do with that, and we'll go from there.
Eric Von Schimmel, interim IT director. As far as providing service for the public, we can't do that as we sit right now. We can't be in competitive bid with or compete with CLEX, which are local exchange carriers, like AT&T's of the world. We don't have the business licenses to do that. So that's where we get into a little kind of gray area. What we can offer in the future possibly is pathways. We would have to work out agreements with leasing out our conduit or possibly fiber. That we'd work out with Public Works how we would do that in the future. But providing it right off the bat to people, we can't do that.
When we're contacted by manufacturers and then talking to the existing manufacturers here in town, they will tell you that there's probably two or three main issues that they have, one being condition of the roads for logistics, but one is the inability to have high-speed internet for their logistics. And this is a common theme all over Carson City, pretty much anywhere you go. having tried to work with the existing carriers on multiple occasions, it's almost impossible to get a call back, let alone actually get anywhere with them as far as tapping into their lines. So what I am interested in is, how does this community go about providing a network of connectivity for our manufacturing and business community looking out into the future, so that we can recruit high-tech business here? Because that is a constant battle that we face. So if we have the ability to put multiple fiber lines in conduit and then lease those out to a particular manufacturer that wants to pay for the connection between the trunk line and their office building, that's something that I would really like to explore, because this is a constant battle and it prevents us from a lot of recruitment. And in some cases, we have lost manufacturers who have moved to other locations like Reno Sparks, because they just can't get the bandwidth that they need here.
Now, one of the things, if they tap into our lines, we don't have a trunk line back to the internet itself. We actually lease our own service from there. So if they were to get into our conduit, onto our fiber, it only rings the city right now. So they would have to then still be in communication with the AT&T's Charter, however, to get onto an internet provider's backbone.
Right, I understand that, but that's our reality today. What I'm saying is that for future planning, I think that we need to look at how we can provide this type of service for our entire city. And I understand that we can't do that now, but there must be some sort of way. And I am, when it comes to IT, I have very little knowledge, but I do know what the complaints have been back to us from the manufacturing community. So if there are ways in the future to provide some connectivity, I just think that we need to look at those in the scope of work.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I am looking into the future for that, and hopefully we can provide something to the business community.
So just as a thought on that is, did we contact AT&T or any of the carriers to let them know we were going to be doing a project in case they wanted to parallel and use it while the lines were open and the roads were cut? Because I know that at the Carson Mall, we were trying to do this very thing so we could Wi-Fi the whole place, and it was, you know, like an $18,000 bill to pull lines and stuff. So I'm just wondering, are we in contact with them to let them know when we have projects coming up that they might be able to piggyback, so the
we
cost would be?
Yeah, we don't talk to them specifically about fiber optic projects, but quarterly we let them, all the utilities, know what our capital projects are and what we're doing, with the idea that we don't want to rip up a street and then them come in 6 months later and rip up the same street. So that effort does go on. We didn't reach out to them specifically and say, hey, do you want to put a conduit in this trench with us at the same time? We didn't do that.
Just a thought for future planning, that it might not hurt to say we're going to be here and you might be able to pick up some customers.
With the installation of the fiber, will this allow for future growth and expansion?
Yeah, so what we have in this project, the majority of the project is placing fiber optic cable in existing conduits that have been installed over several past projects. So what we've done is, with the transmission main, whenever we went in and opened up the road and put in a large water line, we added conduits there with it, with the future intention of populating those conduits. Those were not wrapped into those projects due to cost. So we're really fulfilling that. We're completing that project, something that we set out upon some time ago. And so with this, our standard, our de facto standard, has been 2 4-inch conduits along any of these routes. And at this time, we're only utilizing one. So we have that capacity in conduits and in infrastructure, which could allow and tie back into what you were asking about as far as other people getting in there. We've been making sure that we're putting in enough so that we're not going to hit our limits and, you know, short side ourselves. And in the fiber optic cable itself, we have oversized that to allow reasonable growth for us. In the near term, it's beyond what we anticipate, but yet it's that happy medium where cost meets you know, capacity. We have to pick a spot. In this case, it's 72-strand fiber. For a single link to work from building to building, you need two. We usually run multiple for redundancy reliability. So even if we use 12, there's those additional 60 fibers there that are available for use. And the thing is, with this infrastructure, the conduits are in place. They're the core infrastructure. This cable is the connection through that conduit. So if in the future we reach a point where 72 is not enough, or we have some other compelling reason to go in and add more, we do so. We have the space and the conduit. We have the other one, and that's normal in the industry. You come back and you upsize, and we have the hole in the ground, so to speak, the path between these places. We just populate it as required.
And the conduit was laid by Public Works when they were doing excavation and replacement of water lines or sewer lines. That's the conduit was placed at that time.
Yes, yeah, specifically this conduit that we're using that spans this, because it is a great length. We're talking about a lot of connectivity here. We really are making huge strides in our connectivity. So this conduit specifically was placed with the transmission main projects.
And the tie-in down at the sheriff dispatch system down there, that's really going to be beneficial, but they are also coming to the table with funding to help with that part of the connection, correct?
Yes, they have.
You know, on the access and the ability to have high-speed internet here in Carson City to our manufacturers, I too have been contacted by a few. Maybe it's a possibility we could talk to Nevada Business Connections and NNDA and have them give us a list of the manufacturers that are having trouble, just a suggestion that they can come back to us. And maybe we could work something out through those two entities to work rather than have Public Works or city staff contact all these manufacturers. Maybe we could have somebody indirectly do that.
Hey, Supervisor Shirk, I have been in contact with NNDA. I had a meeting with them last week, I think Monday, with Danny Campo and Valerie Melendez regarding just the fiber optic projects in the city.
I think, Adriana, before you go too far down this road of public Wi-Fi and internet, we need to take a look at our ordinance we just redid and state law, and maybe there's a chance where, you know, we want to think about tweaking that law, so just kind of keep that in mind, okay? All right. Any public comment? Anybody? Do we hear anybody? Motion's in order. Who wants to make it?
I want to thank you all for answering our questions. It's been very informative. I move to determine that Curtis & Sons, Inc. is the lowest responsive and responsible bidder pursuant to Nevada Revised Statutes Chapter 338 and to award contract 1516-014 titled Carson City Fiber Optic Dispatch to Public Works and Community Center to Public Works. Could you come up with some longer names for these? To Curtis & Sons, Inc. for the bid amount of $290,203.50 and a contingency amount of $29,020.35 for a total not to exceed amount of $319,223.85.
Motion and second on the motion. Discussion? I'd just like to say I agree with Supervisor Bunkowski that when I turn my computer on, I want unlimited bandwidth. I don't care how it gets there. On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Okay. All right. Let's go to C. Laura, you're on this one.
All right.
Crack sealant.
Staff is asking for approval of...
Hang on, Laura.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, we've gotten a number of comments. Right now, the Brewery Arts Center is working on our webcast. Our television... our video is currently being filmed on public access TV, but the web version of it is not available. So they're working the problem. We had a similar problem last night with the rack, but they're trying to troubleshoot it and fix it at this point.
So it's on public access television, but it's not being streamed.
That's correct. It is not being streamed over the internet.
That's Granicus. Is that who does? Does it for us?
No, it's not Granicus. The BAC is doing it.
Okay.
We're looking at a potential option with Granicus, but.
All right. Thanks. Public should know that. Sorry for the inconvenience. Okay, Laura, go.
All right. Staff is asking for approval of purchase order 8797 for crack sealant for the city roads from Maxwell Products. This is deemed to be a sole source, not adapted to award by competitive bidding. The current budget for the street fund account is $316,696.52, and this is for the amount for not to exceed amount of $125,000. And Public Works is here to answer additional questions.
Anybody? Supervisor Pankowski, go.
Darren, I remember this presentation from last year, and that this company, Maxwell Products, they have a proprietary liquidation system. Can you kind of go through that again for us so we understand why we're using a proprietary company and their product and how their cost relates to using other products?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it was only a year ago that we were here. So what happens for crack filling is we have a machine that's mounted on a trailer. It's pulled with a truck, and basically it has a big vat on the back of it that gets really hot. And we put this sealant, this tar material, into that vat, heat it up, and then we go out and hose it into the cracks to seal them up. So what happens is that every year we have to order that the sealant, the tar, it comes in square chunks that goes into that machine. So there's a number of different products that you can use for this application. So the first thing we look at is we want to make sure that the makeup of the sealant, the actual tar, is right for our needs here in Carson City. So that takes you might be able to get, 200 different types of blocks. And so then we look at what specification do we need for our cracks here, and that takes the 200 and brings it down to maybe 10 or 12. Then you look, or maybe even a couple less than that. Then you look at those that are available to us and what works the best. The reason we settle on Maxwell year after year is their product, they put a wrap on it, a very thin, skin-tight wrap on that block of sealant, that block of tar. And when it goes into the vat, it melts really, really good. And a number of the other products that we have used, they have a less desirable wrap, shrink wrap, basically, that goes around that product, and it doesn't melt as well. And then we have problems with it plugging up our hose and our apparatus that we use to put it down in the street. So over the years, we've learned what works. It's kind of like the car. What's the best oil for your car? What's the best fuel? So we've settled in on Maxwell, and it causes us the least maintenance issue with our particular machine. As far as cost, we are considerably cheaper than what we got it for last year. It was $910 per ton, and this year we're at $782 per ton. As far as how that relates to the competitors, it's right in there. Not high, not low, right in the middle of the pack. So we're comfortable cost-wise as well.
How do you determine the amount of material that you order? Is it based on your projection of the upcoming weather and the length of the season that you'll be able to fill cracks, or is it just based on inventory on the shelves, or how do you come up with the number?
It's based on previous years, what we've done. And we don't necessarily look at weather because it's just too much of a guessing game. So what we've done in previous years, we know there's going to be more demand than we can do. So it's just a matter of how much time we think our crews will have to put that sealant down, and that's our estimate. Knowing that we may have to, the idea is that we may need to get more. We would have to come back to you and say, hey, we put it all down. We got to order more. Ultimately, if we don't use it all, it's not something that expires. We would use it the following year.
I'll save the rest of my questions. Thank you.
So I'm just wondering, in light of the fact that we're adding an augment to your budget of about $370,000 for street maintenance, do you anticipate needing more? Because this is the very thing we were interested in doing with the additional funds in the streets. So I'm just wondering, do you think you'll actually do more this year?
Yeah, we are currently, as in today, we're working on that as to a plan as to how that's going to go. But we're, I don't want to get too far off the subject, but we're potentially thinking that, that work would be done by a contractor, not by, because we don't, it's more work to do, and so we would almost need to, then you have to hire more people to do that work, and we know that's a no-no. So we're looking more at contract labor for that type of thing, so we wouldn't be directly purchasing the product.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for answering my questions by email, and you really sealed them up really good. You're in that ironic. I would like to know, this product that we're purchasing is the only product that could basically be used in the machine that we're using. Is that correct? And if that is correct, should we look at alternative equipment? Just a question.
So it's not the only product that can be used in our machine. It has nothing to do with the brand that's on our machine, but it's this product works the best in our machine. So there's no reason we can't use the many other products available and put them in our machine. We've just found over the years that those seem to jam it up, plug it up more often. So we found that this one works the best, and we're sticking to it.
And regarding previous years, how much money you've spent on it, it is really how much money is generated in tax revenue and gas tax that would allow us to do more or do less, basically, right?
That's correct.
Okay, public comment? Anybody want to seal in on this one? I did on purpose. All right. Okay, motions in order. Supervisor Bagwell, go.
I move to approve purchase order number 8797 for the purchase of crack sealant from Maxwell Products, Inc. for a not-to-exceed cost of $125,000 pursuant to NRS 332.115, subsection 1A. The Board of Supervisors declare that the contract is not adapted to award by competitive bidding.
Motion and a second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Thank you. All right. Laura, thank you very much. All right. Let's take up item 21, the Public Works. This is the joint funding with USGS. We usually do this. Just give an overview of what's happening here.
Absolutely. Darren Schultz, Public Works for the record. This is something we do every year. It's a cooperative agreement with the city and USGS, and it's there for them to provide the monitoring, the measuring, the QC of water supplies in Carson City. So as they do for all the surrounding agencies as well as throughout the state and the nation, it's a big part of what they do. So it makes more sense for them to do it than for us to do it. And it's actually part of the Alpine decree that went in a number of years ago when there was concerns with water. So we're required to do it, and this is just a joint venture to make it more cost-effective, and they do it best, so we just stay out of it, and they provide all the data to us. Open for any questions.
Where'd the 57-43% ratios come from? So we pay 57% of the cost, and the state pays 43% of the cost. Do you know how they came up with that ratio?
Yes, I do. It's a little bit of a complicated formula, per se, in that a part of the data they're gathering it for their purposes, and the part of the data they're gathering is for the actual city purposes that we have to use for our reporting, and it just shakes out that way and that percentage. So, but we're in favor with how it was developed.
So you're saying that approximately 57% of the work to generate the data for us is for Carson City?
Specifically for Carson City.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Public comment? Motion's in order.
I move to adopt resolution 2015-R37, adopting and approving a joint funding agreement for a cooperative water resource monitoring program with the U.S. Geological Survey.
Motion in a couple seconds on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried. Okay. Let's take up 21B, Lost Lakes Reservoir. Where is Lost Lakes?
They're lost.
That's why I asked the question, man. Go ahead. When do you get through?
Well, I'd like to turn this over to Rit, our water manager. Both B and C kind of come together. They're very similar, but he knows the ins and outs of it, so he can give you a quick overview of both of them.
Rit Palmer, Water Operations Supervisor. Lost Lakes and Mud Lake are both alpine lakes up on Highway 4 towards, what is that, Echo Pass? Mm-hmm. Up towards Echo Pass. They're just alpine lakes there.
Got something? Go.
First, our packet says that this is a purchase of water rights. It's actually a lease, not a purchase.
Yes.
Secondly, this is water that is stored by the Carson Water Subconservancy. They own the rights. They're storing the water. They aren't using the water, so it makes it easy for them to generate some revenue by leasing these water rights to us because we can put it to beneficial use. Is that correct?
Yes, there's multiple users up there. We're just one of them, probably one of the bigger ones. Other counties, Gardnerville, and those people probably purchase some water also.
So this is ongoing. We've been leasing some of these rights before. It's not new water into our system. It's just the payment for the water in our system.
Yes, we've been doing this for multiple decades. It's just a source of water. It's basically the only source we can use to use our river induction wells during the winter off-season months.
Thank you for your response earlier this morning, Darren, where you told me the water rights is 18,272 acre feet/year, and we anticipate using 11,660 in 2015. But these, as you went on to tell me, these two leases allow for surface water, which the city has been in short supply of due to the drought. So that's what these leases are for. It's not for any other purpose other than to help accommodate the surface water, which we have been in short supply of.
Right. The idea is that we're not running out of acre feet of water for the city's use in general. We've obtained enough. This is just a matter of, as like Rit was explaining, it goes into the river and we can take them out down below the river as surface rights. It's a much easier, better way to get our water. So that's the only reason we're doing it.
Thank you. Public comment? Anybody? Board, motion's in order. Who wants to do it?
Move to authorize the mayor to sign a one-year Lost Lakes Reservoirs water lease agreement between Carson City and Carson Water Subconservancy District.
Motion second on the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Thank you. Let's take up the next one, Mud Lake. Same comments on Mud Lake. Public comments. Board, additional comments. Don't see any motions in order on Mud Lake.
I move to authorize the mayor to sign a five-year Mud Lake Reservoir water lease agreement between Carson City and Carson Water Subconservancy District.
Motion second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Okay, let's take up Parks and Rec. Open space, park ranger position. I think we'll just push through, folks. And if anybody needs a break, let me know and we'll take a break. But you need
see
a break?
Huh?
Jim, what do you want? You okay? All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Morning, Mr. Bollendorf.
Well, good morning.
Mr. Scott.
Mayor and board.
Ms. Bollinger, how are you doing?
Good morning. Fine, thanks.
Talk to us about open space. What you doing?
Well, if it pleases the mayor and the board, I'd like to kick this off. You've already recognized Mr. Bruce Scott sitting here to my left, and, of course, Ann Bollinger, who is our open space administrator. I'm going to just give a little kickoff, as I mentioned before. I'll turn it over to Ann. Ann has a very short, brief PowerPoint that she wants to show the board that's going to talk a little bit about the importance of the position that we're requesting and how that fits over into the overall picture, the big picture of the Open Space Advisory Committee or Open Space Program. And then we'll turn it over to Bruce and Bruce wants will talk a little bit as the chairman of the Open Space Advisory Committee, kind of the advisory board's perspective on this position. So, you know, just in general, staff and the advisory committee believe that this is a very essential position for us and for our department to have the ability to manage these properties that we have, almost 7,000 acres of open space property that we currently have. And this is important for us to be good stewards of the property. Ann is going to go into some detail about how we got to the point where we are through the open space program and acquired this property. But I think it's safe to say that from the very inception of the quality of life program, including the open space program, and then with the commitment to enter into an agreement with the federal government and the BLM to accept the property that's been transferred over to us, that there is a commitment that we are going to manage these properties in the best possible manner. And we believe that in order to do that, we have to have this position to provide that type of stewardship. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ann, and Ann is going to go through this PowerPoint. And then we'd be willing to take questions at any time through the presentation as well.
Okay. Ann, Ms. Bollinger, go.
Good morning. Ann Bollinger, Open Space Administrator for the record. I just have a brief presentation. There's, I think, only five or six slides. The beginning will just be a background as a reminder to the board members, but also information for the public. What is open space? Back in 1996, the residents of Carson City approved the Quality of Life ballot initiative, and part of that ballot initiative provides funding for the open space program. Throughout the years, we've been able to acquire land using that funding, and the land includes some of the characteristics that you see in front of you. It includes some of the agricultural lands around town, includes wetlands, and now Sea Hill. Sea Hill was transferred to us from the Forest Service as part of the lands bill, and of course the infamous Horse Creek Ranch right up Kings Canyon Road. The quality of life sales and use tax is identified in the Carson City Charter, where the funds can be used and must be used for the acquisition, maintenance, and management of open space. So as we're talking about this position today, these aren't necessarily funds that can be used for other programs throughout the city. Organizationally, the open space program is a division of the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Department. There's the Parks Division, Recreation Division, and Open Space. Later on, I will return to a similar organizational chart, specifically talking about the Open Space Division. And as I mentioned, Open Space is funded 100% by the Quality of Life Sales and Use Tax. Where is Open Space? This is a very good visual of 7,000 acres throughout Carson City. All of these acres are managed by the Open Space Program. One third of the acres were actually acquired using our quality of life sales tax, but the other two thirds transferred to us from the federal government.
And what is open space interest? Is that parcels that create connectivity between other open space areas or trails that open space would be interested in acquiring at some point?
It is hard to see here. Let me dim the light for a minute. But the interest is the Horse Creek Conservation Easement right there. So we do not own that parcel, but we do have an interest in how it is used and maintained. As for your question, do we have other interests around Carson City? Some of the properties that you don't see on here is actually the Waterfall Trailhead and the Ashton Kings Trail. Those properties are under public works by jurisdiction. But when it comes to recreation management and sometimes weeds, that's when we cross that boundary, if you will, to provide recreation opportunities for our residents. So this map is one of the reasons that we feel that there's a need for the park ranger position. Currently, there's only two full-time employees in the open space program. There's myself and Rich Wilkinson, our natural resource specialist. With the gain of 7,000 acres now under our control, and we're still looking at a few more acquisitions or trail projects, our responsibility will continue. During the lands bill process back in 2006, if any of you attended the public meetings and when the proposal was presented to the board at that time, there were statements and commitments by the city that we would be able to maintain our lands. So with these lands come a number of activities. Silver Saddle Ranch has structures. There's 15 buildings on the ranch. The one in the picture is the Red House. It can be used on a limited basis for meetings. There are events, mostly at Silver Saddle. So by acquiring that property, we also acquired the events that happen. There's about 10 regular events that happen out there. The one in the photo is the Escape from Prison Hill that occurs each spring. Also throughout our properties, not only do we have hiking and biking and trails to maintain, but we also have illegal camping, dumping, fire rings. And the photo on the bottom was an abandoned trailer out in Carson River Canyon about 2 months ago. One of the reasons we are asking for a ranger position and what their responsibilities would be is when they come across similar dump sites as this, abandoned trailer or a car, that they will have the knowledge and the training on how to research VIN numbers, work with the sheriff's office, find the owner, contact insurance companies, get it removed, and if that is not a resource, then work with the tow companies and we can continue down that road. A ranger will be expected to pack up trash. If they're coming across the dump sites as this, they will be expected to pick up trash and not just drive past it. So back to the organizational chart for the open space program. Where does this position fit in organizationally? Everything that you see up here, except for the ranger position, is existing. So my position as the open space administrator, I'm in charge of the open space program. I review the budgets. With the Open Space Advisory Committee, we recommend those budgets to the city manager and to the Board of Supervisors. I mentioned we're still working on acquisitions. As you know, Michael Fagan is interested in a trade with his 20-acre parcel along Highway 50. The Old Woods Ranch, which is the meadow on the south side of Horse Creek Ranch, we are starting into the discussions with them, and there might be other trail properties throughout Carson City. So acquisitions aren't finished. And there's still a couple on the board for us to work on.
And while you have this chart up here, if I read the packet correctly, you're proposing to move the Silver Saddle Ranch host caretaker duties to this new park ranger. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. So the position up here, and I said most of this is existing, the Silver Saddle Ranch host caretaker, in a sense, is a carryover. When it was BLM, they had a person who lived on site for that added security. The current caretaker does not. He lives in town, and one of the main reasons we had to hire him quickly is when the lands transferred to us, we needed someone to open the gates and clean the restrooms. Right now, those are his limited duties. He works 10 hours a week. Perhaps some of it could transfer to the park ranger, but if the park ranger is only working 8 hours a day, we will still need someone to either open or close the gates. He won't be there for both of those times.
So it would be shared, then the duties would be shared between the park ranger and the current host caretaker?
I would see them as separation of duties. The caretaker right now only opens the gates and cleans the restrooms.
It closes the gates.
So the ranger, this is your email to me, the ranger will be responsible to clean and maintain the buildings and grounds, prepare the area for reserve group activities and events, and inspect afterwards for cleanliness and damage. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And along those same lines, is the host caretaker a paid position or volunteer?
It is a paid position.
Paid position. And the seasoned maintenance workers that's going under the park rangers, will he be directing them?
Correct.
Thank you.
And since you did ask that question, we do have two seasonal maintenance workers that we share with the Parks Division. They just work with us 1 or 2 days a week, and they're seasonal. So come October, they will not be employed, and they will be unemployed for 6 months. So right now, they are helping us maintain those properties, collecting the trash. But come October, we won't have anyone to help us do that.
Can I ask a question there? If you have need, though, for the seasonal, can you not hire additional seasonal throughout the year with hourly wage for events or for assistance to do projects within your budget?
We certainly can. That is an option we're looking at. Of course, it's within budget limitations.
Okay, so the senior natural resource specialist, that was the position I held before becoming an administrator. The natural resource specialist is responsible for the natural resources, so which is Rich Wilkinson. He's not here yet, but he manages the fuels project with the sheep now in the spring. He manages now the weed coordinator. As you may recall, Cooperative Extension cut that position in the budget and left us scrambling on what to do for the weed coordinator for the city. That position is supervised by us. It is still a position that's available to all property owners, private, public, prisons, state, but that position is supervised by us now and by Rich. Rich currently manages two grants for the weed position. He is also working on other grants right now for the next year, two for the NDEP non-point source water pollution. Those two grants, one will be for Ash Canyon Road to continue stabilization and erosion projects occurring in that area. And then we're also looking for a project at the south end of Prison Hill. The last big rain event we had took one of the dirt bike trails and eroded it down 3 feet. It's now a small canyon, and it went straight down into the river, threatening Golden Eagle Lane, washing out Golden Eagle Lane. So he's writing a grant for that. The other grants, the north end of Prison Hill, we're looking at improving the trailhead facility at the north end. We installed the fence around the area to limit motorized use. We want to apply for a grant that improves the facility a little bit more with gravel, maybe a kiosk, restrooms. I don't know yet, but those will be public meetings with the neighbors in the community. Rich also helps other divisions and departments. All of you have heard about the disc golf course. One of Rich's responsibilities with the disc golf course is to work with the Parks Division and with the advocates to minimize impact. As I recall, Brad, you were concerned about people walking all over, and we did not want a disc golf course that looks like Rancho San Rafael. So with Rich's background, how can we minimize that impact through Leave No Trace campaign and education? Okay, so the park ranger, how does this position fit in? As I mentioned, they would be on patrol. Probably 50 to 60% of their time would be in the vehicle, on foot or on bicycle, patrolling all of the open space lands, being a presence out there, advising visitors of our rules and regulations, writing citations if necessary, and writing situational reports provided to me.
Excuse me, Ann, when you say he will be on patrol 50% of the time, that's in all open areas. He'll go from area to area.
Correct.
So he'll have to have a vehicle or some sort of transportation for the trail and some sort of transportation to move the bicycle or whatever other vehicle he's using. Is that correct?
Correct.
And he is paid through the open space.
100%.
Is he a city employee, state employee, or park employee?
It would be a city employee.
City employee with the title park ranger.
Yes, and the city does have one other park ranger, primarily working for the Parks Division. Open Space currently pays 10% towards that salary.
It's not like a park ranger like when you go to Yosemite. A park ranger is just a title within the city employee designation,
title
correct?
And job duties.
I'm sorry?
The title and job duties.
Within the city?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
The park ranger, as a year-round position, would prepare Silver Saddle Ranch for the events that come out there, for the group picnics, for the races, for the equestrian events, and so forth. Currently, the way reservations and events work throughout the city, with our reservations coordinator, there's a checklist on how to prepare a facility, and then a checklist when the event is done. And so the park supervisors, and in this case it would be the park ranger, use that checklist after an event is completed to inspect for damage, cleanliness, and so forth. to determine if we return the deposit for their event or not. Opportunities for this position, now since we have Silver Saddle Ranch, there's an amazing opportunity for interpretive programs out there for the public, and invite the public out for bird walks and geology tours and plants, learning about the floodplain. And some of that we are hoping to do on our Public Lands Day celebration on September 26th, so you will get a flavor of some of the opportunities. Rich also recently met with a teacher at Carson High School. She's interested in adopting Silver Saddle Ranch for four of her classes. So there's a lot of educational opportunities. And generally, okay, and then we talked briefly about the Silver Saddle Ranch host slash caretaker. This gentleman, currently his only responsibilities is to open and close the gates and clean the restrooms. And that position perhaps could fall under the park ranger organizationally, since the park ranger can be out there and inspect the task being completed. Then,
and if I may, I'm sorry to interrupt. Going back to the park ranger, he's most of his duty, as you said, is 50% patrol. Out of his normal work day, he'd be spending more time at Silver Ranch or at other. How much of the time will he be at Silver Ranch?
It probably just depends when the events are there.
So he's more of an event coordinator. Suppose those events happening after work hours, when there's an evening or morning.
I would not say primarily an event coordinator. Right now we only have 10 events a year, so that's less than one a month. So the primary job task would be driving around to all of our properties throughout Carson City with part of the time spent at Silver Saddle.
So he'll be generally all throughout the community
correct.
To all open areas, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
And Ann, the schedule, this position would be noticed as not a specific set schedule. It could vary based on events so that we're not paying overtime. It's going to be announced that way, that it's a variable hours, full time, but
correct.
Variable hours.
Okay. There will be a primary schedule in which it is complementary to the existing park ranger. So on the existing park ranger, when he is off, we will make sure ours is on. So both of them can respond if necessary. With that in mind, our park ranger will likely be off Mondays and Tuesdays, and most of the events happen over the weekend. So it would occur during his or her work schedule.
I want to add to those comments and to your question a little bit. It will be somewhat of a variable schedule. However, we do have a contract. This employee will be a CCA employee, part of the employee association. So according to the rules of the contract, there are stipulations on how we can, you know, vary their regular work schedule. But the intent is to have the position be variable to cover weekends when events are going on or when the primary use by the public for open spaces is happening in those areas as well.
And the other items up here is the volunteers, and we categorize those in three areas. There's the nonprofit organizations, so the Friends of Silver Saddle Ranch and Muscle Powered. I oversee the agreements with Muscle Powered. The Friends of Silver Saddle, we're working on it. We've just been buried with time, but Nancy Santos is here with the Friends of Silver Saddle. It is our intent to continue that partnership with them. Individual ambassadors, we have four individuals, one of which is Juan Guzman, who are official volunteers for the Open Space Program. Their duties differ based on their own interests and perhaps their location around town. So we have two individuals who patrol by OHV on the west side primarily. We have one individual who lives near Prison Hill. He's been helping with some of the trail restoration. And then Juan, other duties as assigned, and right now he's helping us to plan the celebration out at Silver Saddle Ranch. And then the special projects, the Kiwanis Club, Pine Nut Mountain Trails Association, and Scout Projects. So most of this is existing.
And can you walk us through, you have a discussion in the packet here about deputy versus park ranger. Can you walk us through that and the cost of each as well as the applicable duties of each?
Okay. So the park ranger would be a non-commissioned position. That was determined probably 15, 20 years ago, that the sheriff's office wanted anyone who was commissioned to be stationed over in the sheriff's office. So since that time, Carson City's park rangers have been non-commissioned. In this case, the park ranger would patrol, be able to write citations, but other duties, such as clean up trash, help with events, and so forth. A deputy position is very strict on what their duties are. They can patrol, and they do help us patrol in the canyon. Our park ranger, current park ranger, when there are situations that need additional assistance, he has called upon the deputies in the sheriff's office. So that is a resource that I expect would still be available for us. The park ranger would report to me. A deputy would report to the sheriff's office.
What's the cost of each?
And the salary on those, the range for the park ranger. Let me pull up that form here. The entry-level salary for a park ranger is $36,266 with a high $54,399 plus benefits, so about 40 to 45% benefits on top of that. A deputy begins at that high salary. So how will the public benefit from a park ranger position? We made a commitment to our residents that we could maintain our lands. Some of that commitment means cleanliness, safety, and the event opportunities. In anticipation for this day, both staff and the Open Space Advisory Committee identified this need in the draft management plan for the Carson River. We identified it on our work plan for this year. And the Open Space Advisory Committee supported this unanimously with a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. And we did budget for it in our undesignated line item. There is $150,000 identified there. The reason it was not identified in salaries, because as we went through the budget process early in the year, January, February, we did not know that these lands were transferring to us. We've been expecting them for 5 years. In March, we got the notice, but we did budget it, and we're ready for it to be transferred. So at this time, if it's approved by the board, it would be a manner of transferring the funds from one account to another.
And IFC's approved this already?
Yes, they have. So one of the duties, our park ranger does not have to wrestle pythons. We do not live in the Everglades. And with that, I can turn it over to Bruce Scott, who can provide comments from the Open Space Advisory Committee.
If I may ask a couple of quick questions before. You had mentioned funding was set aside. So you've kind of anticipated this, and the money's been set aside, as you said, and ready to go to this position. Is that correct?
That is correct.
The current park ranger, what is his duties? What does he do?
Patrol only. Citations and working with the sheriff's office. The reason those job duties are a little different is because the parks division has a lot more support staff for their parks. So they do have people who can prepare facilities for events. They do have maintenance workers.
So the current position, park ranger, just goes around from city park to city park.
Correct.
Enforcement only.
Correct.
No other duties, correct?
Correct. Unless Roger wants to expand on that.
That is correct. That's his primary duties. He also provides assistance during the special events that are held in the parks as well.
The anticipation for the new appointment, new park ranger, is that he will be there for enforcement or citations. The park ranger that's in place now, how many citations has he written, just as a comparison? Is it pretty numerous or one or two?
You know, I don't have the numbers of how many citations he's written in the last year or two. We try, at least in his position, try to avoid citations whenever possible, and that he tries to provide more of an education
opportunities when confronting the public or whatever who may be in violation of park rules and that. Usually the last, the last alternative is to actually provide do a citation. A lot of it is public relations and education. Most of his conflicts are basically with people problems, particularly bad adult behavior, more than likely at youth events, and settling dog issues. You know, dog issues happen to be a pretty big issue in our parks, and he tries to avoid citations, but he does do them when needed. We see a little bit differently maybe on the open space side, particularly on the illegal dumping. That is a situation that's really gotten out of hand. I mean, we're averaging probably several cleanups a month, particularly in the Carson River Canyon. We plan on taking a firmer stand with the illegal dumping and finding out who is doing this and trying to follow up with citations or even possibly turn it over to the Sheriff's Department for arrest too. But by and large, outside of that, a lot of that position's duties will be, as Ann mentioned, kind of be our hands, feet, eyes, and ears on the property, provide public relations and public assistance. For instance, if they're out and about patrolling the open space area and somebody has a problem, mechanical problem, flat tire with their bicycle, we expect that individual to be able to get out and provide assistance to those type of, you know, people in those type of situations.
While he's on duty at the park, will there be any public notice of how to get a hold of the park ranger? Will he have a cell phone, communications that the citizens can call him if they are in trouble?
That's a very good point. Yes, he'll have a cell phone, so he'll have that opportunity. I don't know if we have it on the side of the vehicle, but that would be a good idea to have a number that he can be reached at.
Some of the signs that we do have around town, Kings Canyon, Voltaire Canyon, Carson River Canyon, has a non-emergency number that goes straight to dispatch. From there, the dispatch will know how to get a hold of the park ranger.
Can you explain the difference why we should hire a park ranger and just not have regular city employees clean up, patrol, although I know they can't write a citation? But what is the difference there? Is there a cost savings? What is the benefit of hiring the park ranger over city employees? What title does park ranger do that city employees can't do besides citations?
You know, I'll jump in on that, and Ann can add to it if she'd like to. I think Ann kind of touched on that subject early in the presentation. We need somebody that has that kind of specific training that can enforce ordinances, enforce rules, provide public relations in the event that they have to write citations. That takes a different skill set and a different type of training than our regular maintenance employees would have. And they need to be, you know, really an ambassador to our open space properties, to our public. And do you have anything you want to add to that? And again, this will be a regular city employee. It'll be, it will be employed by the city and have all the benefits that the city employee would have.
And since John left the room, I just want to point out there was a great article in the paper written about open space and quality of life.
Maybe just to cut to the chase a little bit here, and you can talk to us, Bruce. This fits within the overall goal sets and planning that Open Space has been doing for years. Is this on the path of where the committee itself has been looking to deal with open space? That's really what I'm interested in, is that?
Sure. Glad to respond to that. Bruce Scott, I'm the chairman of the Open Space Advisory Committee and pleased to be here. We've touched on the idea of moving from acquisition to management in several of my discussions with you over the last couple of years. It's pretty well been precipitated by the final conclusion of the acquisition of lands from the federal government. In many ways, park ranger is probably, we don't have a good term for this person. We need another management element. We basically have a resource manager, We need somebody who can really put a focus on getting us into the management business on the ground with respect to not only the new acquisitions, which are significant, but also with regard to the ones we have. This is very much in the vein of what the Open Space Advisory Committee has envisioned. We're a pretty frugal group, and we, if we can go back to this one, this, we basically have two people. This would be a third person, frankly, and I see him as much of a beginning management person for the on the ground. What do we need to do in all of our open spaces, whether it's signage, whether it's patrolling, whatever it is. We've got a landmine out there with regard to what's happening with these spaces between, you know, the along the river and at Silver Saddle with regard to dumping, with regard to education. People have used those areas for a long time, and we need some gentle education to bring people along and also to educate them about their open space and to take some pride in it. And so the Open Space Advisory Committee coming to you as a recommendation for a new position doesn't come lightly. I really see the value in seasonal workers and other much less expensive personnel to help accomplish what is clearly a much bigger management need than this one person can serve. But I see them as taking the lead in becoming, in effect, the on-the-ground manager as well as the on-the-ground eyes and ears for some pretty big responsibilities that we've taken. We've been somewhat critical of the care and maintenance that has happened at Silver Saddle, for example, under the federal government. And they have serious limitations, and we understand that. And I don't say that to be critical. But frankly, I think people in Carson City deserve better open space than the federal government was able to maintain. And I really hope we can begin to set the tone for Carson City with this position and the management, effective management of what we can do building on this. But you're not going to see a lot of recommendations from the Open Space Committee until we think we're sort of past the point where we really could use them, as opposed to we want more. I mean, you've got a, as I said earlier, you've got a pretty frugal group there, and frankly, I think this is a critical position, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Who has jurisdiction or responsibility on the land behind the college and up to Timberline and over towards Ash Canyon? I mean, I get complaints all the time between motorcyclists, cars, and walkers. I mean, whose responsibility is that up there?
It's a combination. Right behind the college, the first parcels is college land, WNC. A little further uphill is state lands, and then a little further beyond that, closer to that, homes are private properties.
So does the city have any leverage or leeway to enforce issues up there? Or, I mean, this sounds like a Clear Creek Road issue.
Yeah, maybe just Mr. Mayor Bruce Scott, the Open Space Advisory Committee has begun to address some of the issues of signing ordinance potential elements to try to bring some compatibility to that diverse patchwork up there, because we hear a lot of complaints about that. I think our park ranger will be very helpful in that regard, because a lot of that issue is more monitoring, observing, and if there's a problem, getting the right entity to deal with it, whether it's simple enforcement with dogs or whether it's somebody in their vehicle where they shouldn't be. My suspicion is, from a practical standpoint, we'll have a bigger presence up there, begin to address some of those issues without getting too concerned about whose jurisdiction it is technically, while we go through a longer process of sort of sorting through any city ordinance requirements that might be necessary in the bigger picture for, you know, more legally based enforcement, because 99% of what happens is just either getting a license number or following up with somebody or trying to, you know, educate them. But it's a patchwork.
Okay. And how, on the Prison Hill, how are we doing there between motorized and non-motorized on the, where we've got it defined? How's that relationship going?
On the north end, a few months ago, we completed the install of a fence to help define the parking area. There is a person or more than one that has decided to drive around the fence. So we will look at extending the fence. We didn't want to, but if that's what it takes, we will do that to control motorized use on the north end. It is not allowed per the conservation easement, but the fence has really deterred any most motor use on the north end. The south end is the major problem on the south end where motorized use is allowed is at the summit. Vehicles drive up and they drive over and then they get stuck. And a few weeks ago, I was out with the Eagle Scout project installing some new trail route signs on Prison Hill, and it sounds like they even want to adopt Prison Hill and want to look at that as an option for their next scout project, and I don't know what that will be, some sort of barrier, rocks, I don't know, but they all said, brought it to me that it was a problem as well.
And you know, I appreciate the, you know, the, I don't know how you teach people not to dump. I mean, it just, you know, the phrase no class comes to mind, but, you know, and I guess, you know, the other complaint I get is, and I'm sure we all get it, is people not properly cleaning up after their animals when they're using our trails. And I guess that's an educational issue that we need. But it's one that, you know, like, you know, you get, there's a lot of people who get offended by that. So if this new guy or woman can take charge of that, and maybe it should be a woman that gets out there, because they got a bigger voice, man. So at least in my house they do. So, all right.
Most households.
Okay. All right. Public comment? Yep. Good morning.
My name is Nancy Santos. I'm the president of Friends of Silver Saddle Ranch. So I've written a letter to the Board of Supervisors, and I just want to kind of go over what I have here regarding the park ranger. So on behalf of the Friends of Silver Saddle Ranch, I'd like to encourage the Carson City Board of Supervisors to accept the recommendation from the Open Space Advisory Committee and approve a full-time park ranger position dedicated to the Open Space Division of Carson City Parks and Rec. Now that Carson City is responsible for managing Silver Saddle Ranch and the additional approximately 3,500 acres associated with the open space acquisitions, it is essential that the Open Space Division have a full-time park ranger that can monitor all open space properties, including Silver Saddle Ranch and their resources. The draft Carson City Open Space Parks and Management Plan states that with the acquisition of these additional open space properties, including Silver Saddle Ranch, that there will be a need for additional staff, including a full-time park ranger and a part-time caretaker, to provide a balance of resource protection, passive recreation opportunities, and interpretation and environmental education. And all these things are really important out there. Some of the park ranger functions that we see as essential include identifying resource problems, developing solutions, implementing projects for resource preservation and rehabilitation, including noxious weed control, patrolling the parks, open space, and other jurisdictional facilities for the purpose of controlling crime, preventing and detecting violations of laws, and assisting in making arrests. Explain and interpret park and open space ordinances, rules, and regulations. Education, again, on that is really important. If they don't know, they won't abide by the rules. Collaborate and maintain working relationship with community members, volunteers, committee members, agencies, and stakeholders. Report facilities and trails maintenance issues and respond to emergencies as parks and open space. Safety, again, is important that they're out there to help people that need their assistance. So in closing, we'd just like to encourage the approval of the full-time park ranger for the Open Space Division of Carson City Parks and Rec. And And we believe without it, at a minimum, one full-time on-the-ground Carson City staff management and protection of Carson City open space will not be provided the protection or other or offer the services that should be available to the community. Thank you.
Very good. Good statement. Thanks. Okay. Bill, you want to come up? Mm-hmm. And thanks to your folks at Silver Saddle Ranch. Do a good job out there. Thank you.
Resident of Timberline and a very frequent user of the open space. I've done the Prison Hill run a couple of times, but mostly I'm on the west side. And I am very much supporting the concept of having a ranger. And it makes sense to me to have it a non-sworn, non-commissioned position, certainly from a budgetary standpoint. I'd like to briefly, over the many years I've been going up there, there have been issues, security type issues, including an instance a couple of years ago when I was running along the creek, two young men on motorcycles came down that trail next to the creek, Ash Canyon Creek, which made no sense at all. It was dangerous. We have a gate up at the top of the thing that's to limit access to the water system, I believe, up Icy Canyon. That gate's been broken. It was rammed, evidently, by a vehicle a couple of years ago. It's there. It's now wide open. Last year, there were a couple of men in an old vehicle that were messing around with the one of the water control valves. They left when I walked up and engaged them in conversation. These are instances, there's not much, but there's a real isolation factor when you're in that open space and you're up in amongst the hills. And it would be very nice to have an occasional ranger come through and just be as a presence. Generally, the individuals are doing this stuff and the dumping. The last thing they want is to have anybody around. And if no people are periodically monitoring the place, I think it will result in less dumping. Another factor of the dumping that Kevin McCoy had brought up with me was the potential to pollute the water that we drink out of Vicey and in this one instance, somebody had dumped barrels of paint and stuff, and they'd rolled partway down, and it was a mess to clean up. So that's pretty much it. I think it's overdue, and I'm glad it's going to happen, and I'm glad that it will not be just Silver Saddle Ranch, which is obviously going to be the big issue, but from a safety, security, and in terms of, like you mentioned in the opening the other day, we want to have this a safe, secure facility, not only for our residents, but for our neighbors, our tourists. And I have met people up there from Tahoe, from Truckee, using our trails. That's even before it was officially opened. So thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Thanks, Bill. See you out on the trail.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Mark Kimbrough for the record, and I came to talk about park rangers a little bit since I spent about 40 years doing that type of work in Nevada and ran at least 12 different parks in northern Nevada.
I don't think you have the qualifications.
I don't think so either.
Well, you might as well just quit now.
If I didn't have to retire, if I didn't move into management, it would have been a lot better deal. But it's a great profession, and there's a big difference between law enforcement staff and rangers. The Rangers, you'll have a nice college degree and have this, they should have like 10 different hats. And that's the requirement versus law enforcement. And law enforcement does what they do really well. And I worked in Washoe County Parks for 7 years without law enforcement with a badge and a very busy park in Washoe Valley and out at Pyramid Lake for a while. Then I worked for state parks, and then I was a peace officer. So I've worn both hats, and this job is totally a non, doesn't need to be commissioned. And there's two types of recreation. There's dispersed, and there's like developed. And most park rangers are in developed areas, campgrounds, Lahontans, Tahoes, Davis Creek Park, some of the parks I used to work at. Those are developed, and they have a higher level of use and a little different opportunity for things to not happen due to family conflicts and alcohol, and there's a trigger that's easily released when people are out playing and having a good time. They don't like people to come in and interrupt that. So they're a lot lighter on the trigger. Dispersed recreation, I used to love that. As an example, I ran San Harbor for 10 years, and nothing I love better than to go in the backcountry, which some of you have had a chance to visit, go up to Marlette. It's a total different world. That's dispersed recreation. You could put your gun in the jockey box and not even worry about stuff most of the time up there. So that's the type of recreation that takes place down here. And certainly along the river, there's some that pushes the edge of maybe some higher level of concern, which when we drafted the, I was involved with the Carson River group that drafted the plan for the Carson River several years ago. Safety was their main concern. And I think park design can fix all that. They've started putting barrier fences in and put, and this patrol, I don't like the word law enforcement if you're not commissioned. It's public education while you're out there. And avoid that term if you can, and then you're not thinking of enforcement so much. And so this position really fits well. And if I know Brad reads most all of the comments in the staff reports. And I made comments. Bruce had to shut me down. I start rambling after a while. So you're talking 40-year career. So I said I had heartburn with this process, and this is my vision. Open space, the monies were set aside to manage those open space. I love the Sheriff's Department. I worked with them for years. When you're in law enforcement, they are your brothers, and you work with them a lot. And my heartburn was the vision that we're going to send out now with a person, because of what law enforcement's all about. Now you have a vest, you have a taser, you have a gun, you have a second gun, you have a stick, you have all this gear that you're going to put out in the park environment. I don't think needs to be there until there's an incident, and then they need to be there. And then, like, the serious situation on the rivers or something. And they're always there, and I think they enjoy coming out of their regular duties sometimes to come out and park sites to help with incidents that are a little different for them and out of the city and stuff. So they actually, at San Harbor, they used to draw straws who got to come there and handle our situations because they enjoyed coming out of there instead of answering house burglar alarms all day long in Incline Village. So I'm trying to give you that image that we were trying to avoid. And law enforcement nowadays takes so much time away from your staff. And state parks tried to do some full-time law enforcement staff that were called LA Rangers, and they get bored. They're used to more activity during the day. So after this program grows, they're actually going to start, you'll start seeing things go down because there's people out there. There's designs like the waterfall trail. It used to have all kinds of gang activity and graffiti, and now that it's open and more open to the public, most of that's disappeared now. So there's, if you design things well, you'll get and make it a higher kind of a more patrol, more people, things disappear. So I think it's all going to disappear. So a law enforcement person would, after a while, is going to get bored and look for things to do that besides just drive around in a car and patrol. So the word patrol is just, it's just part of what they're doing. Really, they're not patrolling. They're probably going to check something or do something in the field. They're not just driving around in a truck. That used to be the image of a ranger was, they drove around trucks and waved at people, you know. That's all your job was in the old days. They had no clue about how much time you spend managing and taking care of all these facilities and the public concerns and the first aid. There's first aid. There's a little bit of knowledge of law enforcement. There's resource knowledge. There's interpretive knowledge. There's all these tons of things that come into play. And then what you'll never forget is with your college degree you have, you still do garbage in bathrooms. There's a trade-off there for that great profession. So I'm going to quit speaking before I get shut down here, and like Bruce had to do with me tonight. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. Oh, I want to say one more thing. I couldn't make it. I had a prior commitment. I loved seeing the staff up at the ribbon cutting at the bridge. I thought, and the Board of Supervisors there, that was great. I think a lot of respect for you to come up and show support for outdoor activities like trails. So I thank you for that, for being there.
And at the Tahoe opening, you know, at the Tahoe Summit, Congressman Amade said he used to clean the toilets up there. So, you know, I'd say, you know, Mark, when you're back out here, we've got another job for you.
No, thank you. But I would volunteer to ride with this new ranger for a while if they wanted that. There are some techniques and ways. I went to some training for law enforcement without weapons. State of Idaho didn't have that. I went to training there, and I went to training a lot of the county systems in California that are far bigger than Nevada's park system has rangers that don't have weapons. And there's techniques and ways to approach and do things that make it a lot safer for them out there. And I know the sheriff will highly support this position with contacts and immediate response. Some of the parks I had were sometimes an hour away from response, so this is a lot different here.
Thanks, Mark. Okay. All right. Further public comment? Anybody want to weigh in? Yes, ma'am. Okay. Come on up. Let's see what the question is, and we'll see if we can get an answer or do something with it.
Okay. Colleen Schiller. I would like to know, what is the salary of the Silver Saddle Ranch host caretaker?
$10 an hour.
Okay, so he's just hourly. All right, and that individual has no other responsibilities in the...
That is correct.
Okay.
And works 10 hours a week.
Okay, other public comment? I don't see any more. Are we ready to do this? We've been through it on the work plan, but let's see what we do today. Comments in order. Go ahead.
I just want to briefly talk about responsibility. I think that the people in... of Carson City have spoken pretty loudly that open space is a priority for them, but along with that priority comes responsibility for management and for maintenance. And it doesn't do us any good to go out and spend tens of millions of dollars to acquire all this open space and then let it deteriorate and become filled with trash. So I am all in favor of making sure that we have an appropriate and adequate number of staff to manage and maintain. You caught that, right? to manage and maintain our open space areas. Thank you.
Let's do a motion that we can discuss if we want.
I'll make a motion.
Motions or Supervisor Short, go.
I move to accept the recommendation from the Open Space Advisory Committee and approve a new full-time park ranger position dedicated to the Open Space Division.
Motion and a second on the motion. Discussion. Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Thanks very much. Thanks, everybody. Silver Saddle Ranch folks. Everybody.
Thank you.
Bruce. Okay.
We appreciate your help.
All right. Let's now move to non-action items on item 23. Any board members got anything to add here?
A couple of things, if you don't mind.
Things, go ahead.
I know this came up before in earlier discussions. I would like... maybe possibly if the mayor and the city manager could rethink our position on when board members submit questions to city staff, and we know obviously all of us do submit questions by email. If the information provided to those questions could be provided to all board members as it relates to agenda items coming before the board, not necessarily the board member's name, even if the questions have to be deleted, but the information that is related to one board member should go to all board members if it's related to an agenda item. If the mayor and the city manager maybe could sit down and discuss this and maybe come to a conclusion that we could better inform all board members as these go through the system with staff. The other thing I would like to mention is the 9/11 ceremony that will be held at Mills Park. Public Works is getting everything ready for that, and it should be an event hopefully the community can attend. It will be on September 11th. I would recommend being there at 8:30. It should start at roughly 8:46. Also, in conclusion, I just want to give a congratulations to Public Works for an outstanding job they did on the Blue Line. If you haven't seen this, maybe we could post a picture of the Blue Line on the website, taking off that mule deer picture that's been on there since June. It's a great project, and thank you, Public Works.
I'd like to thank Supervisor Shirk for working on the 9/11 ceremony. In addition to that, I do have a fun item to add. This is a really cool item, at least it is to me. Okay, I happen to be talking to the new commander, the master of the USNS Carson City. And he was relating that, you know, there's a program the Navy has about bringing their ships to the community that they're named after. And he says it's pretty hard to get the Carson City to Carson City. But he said, you know, I think we can get that ship to Sacramento. Now, how about that? Huh? We can drive that, because it's a literal combat ship, you know, it's a literal transport ship. If we could get that, and he said, you know, it's a year off till this thing gets done, and it has to be home port on the Pacific Coast. But, you know, we've got the guy in the right place to do these things. If we could get that to Sacramento, those folks who couldn't get down to the commissioning or whatever, what a wonderful idea. What a wonderful thought. You know, we could bring the whole city down there. We could take over Sacramento. Okay, that's my cool.
We don't want it.
We want your waterway, but we don't want anything else. Okay, that's my cool thing. I thought, you know what, and that's his idea, not, you know, I thought, you know what, boy, you know, that's what life's all about. So that's my little addition today. All right, anybody else? We ready to adjourn? Public comment? Thanks. For anybody? I don't see any public comments, so unless there's an objection, we adjourn.